This recording is from Willow Creek Church in Winter Springs, Florida, where Dr. Pete Allinson is our senior pastor. Today's sermon is by Dr. Steve Brown. It's part one in the 2006 Advent series and is titled Wonderful Counselor. This message is taken from Isaiah chapter 9, verses 6 and 7. Now here's Steve with today's message.
This is the first Sunday in Advent. And I have no idea what I was smoking when I said I'd do this. I don't do well with Christmas. As I told you, I look like Santa and I feel like Scrooge. And kids come up to me and say, "Oh, Santa, let me tell you what I want for him." I said, "Just be quiet, kid. You're going to get sticks and coals. Deal with it." I wouldn't do that. But sometimes, I don't know why that is, why Christmas is such a difficult time for me. It may be the adult child of the alcoholic thing. If you suffer from that particular malady, you know what I'm talking about. Christmases don't have good memories to them, and you're big in control, and nothing is in control at Christmas. And every time it got out of control, you got hurt. So maybe it's that the memories aren't so good, and the adult child thing haunts me at Christmas. I don't know. Maybe I don't like Christmas because I was a pastor for so long. If you love your people, God help me, I did. If people are depressed, they're more depressed at Christmas. If you've lost somebody at Christmas, it's really, really hard. If the pain is there during the year, it gets magnified at Christmas. And if you love your people, Christmas can be really hard for a pastor. I'm not sure. I'm better than I was. But I still struggle with it. I think that part of it has to do with so many people who miss it at Christmas. This is as close as anybody's going to get. My friend, late friend, Rusty Anderson, used to say he loved Christmas except for the Jesus part. Said he liked the parties and the family and the gifts and stuff. That was cool, but Jesus, he messed it up. And he said, every time I was enjoying the other stuff, I would think about the religious stuff and I'd feel guilty. He said, I don't know why we can't have our own Christmas in the summer for believers, and then we'll have a holiday to celebrate whatever at Christmas. I understand that, but there's something at Christmas, have you noticed? Where people get close and so many miss it. There's not a time, I mean, people are funny at Christmas, they're weird. People walk around with a smile on their face. If you go to the mall, and I hate the mall anytime, but at Christmas, golly. Do you ever think everybody there is there for somebody else? There's something about Christmas that really is warm and fun. Now, I don't feel it, but I can see everybody else feeling it. There's something, maybe Jesus at Christmas. And I can see the mother putting her ornaments down in the box from the tree. And she thinks, what was that? What was all that about? And then she thinks and says, and she mops the floor or goes to the office. And there's so many like that at Christmas who miss it. I don't know. But I like to talk about Jesus, and we're going to talk about Jesus this morning. Pete and I are going to share the 4 weeks of Advent. There are four names in the 9th chapter of Isaiah. The first this morning, Wonderful Counselor. And then the next is Mighty God. And then Everlasting Father. And Pete's going to do that one. And you don't know it because he doesn't talk about it much, but he's being used in a wonderful, unbelievable way in men all over this country. And he's the one to talk about the Everlasting Father. I've heard him talk about the father wound and what that does to you. And then he's going to do the final one, Prince of Peace. And then we do Christmas Eve, my favorite service of the year. Oh. By then, if you didn't get the gift, it's too late. If you got the card on December the 23rd and you went, oh, I should have sent one, it's too late. You can't fix it. You can't make it better. What is, and then you can think about Jesus. I love our Christmas Eve service, so I'm looking forward to that. Get to talk about Jesus. This morning we're going to do that. But the interesting thing is that we're going to talk about Jesus from the lips of a man who lived 700 years before Jesus was born. I loved what our pastor said when he lit the prophet candle about the prophets. This is a prophecy, and it was right. He looked forward, and we look back. If you have your Bibles, turn to the 9th chapter of Isaiah, and I'm going to start reading at the 6th verse. For to us a child is born, to us a son is given. And the government shall be upon his shoulder, and his name shall be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Of the increase of his government and peace there will be no end. On the throne of David and over his kingdom, to establish it and uphold it with justice and righteousness, faithfulness. From this time forth and forevermore, the zeal of the Lord of hosts will do this. Now, in just a moment, we're going to get down and look at our wonderful counselor. But before we do that, I want to go down one side road. And I want you to note, please, the flowers that grow in the manure or in the dirt. One of the interesting things about Isaiah is the radical change that takes place at the 40th chapter of Isaiah. Through the 39th chapter, it is condemnation, it is judgment, it is prophecy, and it is hard. And then the first verse of the 40th chapter, Isaiah writes, comfort ye my people. Now let me give you some advice. Don't, for your evening devotions, read anything in Isaiah 1 through 39. Give you nightmares, make you feel guilty, wonder if you're saved, and maybe you're going to hell. But if you want to sleep better, start at the 40th chapter, open Isaiah to any place there, and read it. It is so good and so comforting and so uplifting and so inspiring. In fact, it's such a radical change that a lot of scholars, liberal ones in particular, have said there isn't one Isaiah, there are two Isaiahs. Isaiah, 1st Isaiah, and 2nd Isaiah. There are even some who have said that Isaiah isn't one or two, it's a family. In 1947, a little Bedouin boy was at the Dead Sea. And if you've ever been there, that is an awful place. And he had a little dog, and his dog went into one of the caves around the Dead Sea, and he called his dog, and the dog wouldn't come, so he took a rock and he threw it into the cave, and he heard a crash, as in a clay jar breaking to pieces. That was the beginning. I wish I had time to tell you the whole story of the Roman legions that had come up the North Rift Valley, of what they found at the Dead Sea, about the monastic community there. It is such a cool story. But that little Bedouin boy started something that became the greatest and most important manuscript find in the history of the Christian church. Did you know they found manuscripts, and it had been a monastic in the caves around the Dead Sea. It had been a monastic community. In their library, they found manuscripts to almost every book of the Old Testament. And when they found the Isaiah scroll, the liberals said, now they're going to see. Those obscurantist fundies are going to see, man. There are two Isaiahs. There'll be two. And there wasn't. It was seamless. You see, the scholars understood manuscripts, but they didn't understand God. And so we have this morning in the 9th chapter, we're going to see later in the 1st chapter of Isaiah, that God goes around planting flowers in the mud. I love missionaries on the field. I don't like them when they come home. They clean up and speak nice and put on a tie or nice dress and say things, you know, They're raising money. You got to do that with us. But if you want to see a real missionary, you got to go on the field, man. There's dirt under their fingernails. They're doing a hard job in hard places. And they're earthy and they're real people. I love missionaries. But when they come home, and I understand, you got to raise money. You got to pay for this thing. And we had a missionary in a church that I once served who was in a very bad country. And she came home and she was making nice. I invited her into my study and closed the door. And I said, how's it really going? She said, it's hell. It's awful. You have no idea. I said, well, you going back? She said, are you crazy? Of course I'm going back. I'm raising money to go back. I said, what are you going to do when you go back? And she said, I'm going to plant flowers in hell. That's what we do. We're not home yet. We're citizens of another country. What are we doing here? We're planting some flowers. But it's very important that when we go through our tough time, that we not miss the flowers. I almost bring it up in every sermon. We went through Andrew. I'm going to get home and meet Noah, and he's going to say, you don't know nothing. But we did. And it was a hard time. You know, we lost our stuff. Kathy lost her stuff. You were very fortunate to get Kathy up here because she does these decorations for Christmas. Used to drive me nuts. My wife, I'm married to Miss Christmas. You ought to see our house. It looks like a Christmas shop, except my study, and she wouldn't dare. Besides, she didn't have the key. I stole her key from her. She can't get into my study. But Kathy went through it, and boy, we lost it. And I love these decorations. I'm not as bad as I sound, but we lost a lot of stuff. And people that say, well, I'm a Christian, stuff's not important, they're lying. It's not true. Don't say that. Now, Jesus ought to be more important than your stuff, but if you don't think your stuff's important to you, you ought to lose it one time. See how that feels. And so we got in the car, we started driving north, trying to find a place we could stay. We couldn't find any place till we got to an hour and a half away in Boynton Beach. We stayed in this old hotel there, and every morning we'd get in a car and we'd drive back to Miami to our wet, roof without a roof house, stuff destroyed, kind of try to salvage as much as we could. Let me tell you something that happened. Every day as we drove back, we left early in the morning, we turned on the radio, and we'd listen to WRMB in Boynton Beach, a Christian station. And do you know, they prayed for us by name. They didn't know whether we were dead. They didn't know where we were. They certainly didn't know that we were staying two blocks from the radio station. But every morning they would lift up Key Life and its staff and Steve and Anna and the family and say, God bless them, be with them and get them through this stuff. And we just there with tears going on our face because we had discovered the flowers in the manure. I don't know what you're going through. I suspect some of you are going through some really hard stuff. I know that. Life's not for sissies. Maybe you're losing your job. That's a bummer. Christmas. Maybe you got family stuff. And maybe you're struggling with your academic. I don't know what it is. But if you don't look for the flowers, you'll turn bitter and mean and condemning. And it'll mess up your life. So always look, because God always gives them, always look for the flowers in the manure. Okay, now let's turn to the main thrust of the text. Two salient points I want you to remember. The first is, if you're using the King James Version of 1611, well, you ought to get a new Bible. If you're using the King James Version, there are five names for the coming Messiah. And it's wonderful is the first one, and Counselor is the second. That's not the way the text reads. It's one name for a counselor, wonderful, magnifies, points to, tells us about what the counselor is like. And the second salient point is this, that the name wonderful means it has overtones of our word wonderful, but in the Hebrew, it generally means supernatural, as in wow. We're Presbyterians. We do things decently and in order, as it should be. That's where we've been called. We're supposed to, in a cerebral way, grab the propositions of the Bible and teach those to the entire body of Christ. That's our job. That's the gift that we offer to the body of Christ. But you know, that Why did you pray this morning? Because for the same reason you took a bath or ate your vegetables or your eggs. I mean, we Presbyterians do what you're supposed to do. We're in church because that's what somebody who's proper is supposed to do. And we never sense the awesomeness and the wowness and the power of a supernatural God. The best thing that could happen to our congregation is that if we all broke out and started speaking in tongues, scare Pete to death, man. No, I don't speak in tongues, and I'm not charismatic, but it would break through. I mean, we would see the power. Maybe we could dance naked before the throne the way David did. It's a metaphor. I'm kidding. God turned his wife and said, "Me, babe, I ain't doing that." But what if we really believe that God is God? That there was no reason to despair. That he healed people's bodies. That he got us jobs. That he intervened. We live in a supernatural world. We fight a supernatural battle. It could be that the depression you feel at Christmas doesn't have anything to do with your father. It has to do with him. Old Slewfoot himself. Greater is he that is in you than he who is in the world. That's 1 John 4:4. And it's true. We have amazing authority and power, but we don't use it because we think it's a different battle. It's really not. It's supernatural battle. And so you've got to preface everything that Isaiah said about Jesus with supernatural. So he's a supernatural counselor. Now, let me tell you what I did this week. I went through the Bible and I looked up some of the references to counselors. And I found 8 or 9. I'm only going to share 3 or 4 with you. So you owe me. Put me in your will. Let me show you the first one. A supernatural counselor who speaks truth. Turn to the 119th Psalm. And I'm going to start reading at the 23rd verse. Even though princes sit plotting against me, your servant will meditate on your statutes. Your testimonies are my delight, and they are my counselors. Hey, listen, I hope you follow me out of the parking lot. You know it hasn't rained a single time on Sunday morning since we were there? I think it's my purity. No, I don't think so. But you know, you realize what a mess that's going to be when it rains? And we haven't had a single bit of rain on Sunday morning. That's God. That's a supernatural God. Well, I hope you follow me out of the parking lot because I've got the coolest bumper sticker you ever saw on my Honda Accord Hybrid. That's because I protect the environment and you don't. That's because I care about our children and you don't. And because of what I just said, God crashed it after having it for 2 weeks. I backed into a truck, hated it. I thought, I can't believe that, to my new car. And God said, you don't get over this, it's going to be worse. And I thought, well, I'll get it fixed. And God said, no, you won't. You'll look at that place on the back of your bumper, and every time you look at it, you'll remember your self-righteousness. And so I've been, until my friend John Whitehead, who is the head of the Rutherford Institute, sent me this cool bumper sticker. God didn't say I couldn't cover up the hole with a bumper sticker, so I've got this bumper sticker, and you know what it says? It says, speak truth to power. And it's right under my pro-life license plate. Confuses the liberals. I mean, that sounds like a liberal statement underneath the pro. I just love it. Speak truth to power. It's so me. I love it. I thought when I saw it, that's what God has done to us. Spoke truth to the lies, to the spurious power of our world. And we've been called to do exactly the same thing. Have you noticed how many books are being written by atheists making fun of our faith? What's with that? When I was an atheist, I didn't go write a book about something I didn't believe in. They need to get a life. That's crazy. I mean, if I didn't believe in it, man, it's like writing a book on why there's no fairy or whatever. That's crazy. But they do, and some Christians have been intimidated. Don't you do that. You've been given the truth. And it's true truth. when the Civil War was about over, Richmond had been captured and the Union troops had come into Richmond, Jefferson Davis had fled, they took wagon loads of Confederate money out of Richmond. And you know what the Union troops did at night? They played poker with Confederate money. $100,000 a hand. But it didn't mean anything. That's what we do. We come to the poker games of the world and we say, that's phony. That's not important. At Christmas especially, I'm not against the commercialization of Christmas. I understand it, that vendors have got to make a buck. They got to feed their family too. But they tell you stuff's not true. They tell you juice plus will keep you from dying. They tell you that if you just get the right computer, and you just got one 2 weeks ago and they upgraded it and now you got to get a new one. They tell you if you didn't have the right iPod so you could listen to music all the time and never think, mask it with, they tell you that's important. They tell you it's important to use the right, that's not important. That's playing poker with Confederate money and you know it. And the reason you know it is because Messiah at Christmas has come and spoken truth to power. Light to darkness, reality to the lies. And that's a cool place to be, because we know. And that's why Christmas is so important to us, the fulfillment of the prophecy that the supernatural counselor would speak truth. And then I want you to go with me back to Isaiah, to the first chapter of Isaiah. I want to show you how the supernatural Messiah shares favor. Look at the 26th verse. And I will restore your judges as at the first, and your counselors as at the beginning. Afterward, you shall be called the city of righteousness, the faithful city. In Luke 23, Joseph of Arimathea is called a counselor. What's a counselor? Somebody with power. Who's Jesus? Somebody who sits at the right hand of God, the Father Almighty. I love Garth Brooks' song, I'm not good on the social graces, I think I'll slip down to the oasis, where I've got friends. I got friends in low places. You ought to have some friends in low places. That's why we're here. But you ought to have, and remember, you got a friend in a high place at the right hand of God the Father. I miss my kid brother more than I can tell you. I miss him for a lot of reasons. He's my best friend. When he died, I died some. He would probably seriously be the governor of North Carolina if he had lived. He was the most charismatic politician in North Carolina. And he was a delight. I ran his media campaign. He was a delight to market. I mean, he's just so cool. And I used to watch him speak at these meetings. And I want to jump up and say, that's my kid brother. Is he something else? I miss him. I miss him for a lot of reasons. But I miss him because he was the district attorney in the 28th Congressional District where I grew up. And I grew up on the wrong side of the tracks. And all of a sudden, I had friends in high places. I could get parking tickets fixed. I there was one police officer that used to yell at me when I was growing up. And now he called me Mr. Brown. And I loved having a friend in a high. I spoke for the Central Florida Mayor's Prayer Breakfast this year. And I got a chance to meet our mayor in Oviedo, where I live. And I thought, gosh, I told him, it's so good to meet you. And he thought it's because I thought he was so smart. That didn't have anything to do with it. I just wanted him to be my friend so he could fix parking tickets. Remember that. You should never despair. My brother said one time when he lost his job, he was working as a waiter one summer on Cape Cod. He wasn't depressed. And I said, brother, you don't look depressed to me. He said, I'm not. The next minute can change my life. That's true with you. Some of you are going through some hard stuff. It's him. Don't be afraid. You got a friend in high place. You remember in Matthew when Jesus came walking on the water in the middle of the storm, scared the spit out of the disciples? They thought it was a ghost and they weren't big into ghosts. And Jesus said in Aramaic, be cool. Don't don't be afraid. It's me. God can give you your job back. He can heal your body. He can make a difference in your life. You can win the lottery. You don't know. He really, well, you shouldn't be buying tickets anyway. But if you do and you win, tithe it. Tainted money. Tainted enough. But, I'm sorry. I just wanted to say something there before you started writing me letters about buying lottery tickets, okay? But God can do something really cool for you in the next second because you've got a friend in a high place and he is fond of you and likes to do cool stuff for his own. And then there's one other thing. Couple other things I want you to see. Go to 1 John 2:1. I put paper clips in my Bible. It's very embarrassing if somebody who does what I do can't find a text. So we're in 1 John, and I want you to look at the second chapter and the first verse. My little children, I'm writing these things to you that you may not sin. But if anyone does sin, we have an advocate, Greek counselor, with the Father, Jesus Christ, the righteous. I wish you knew my friend John Longinot. He's our lawyer. He's not an attorney. He's a lawyer. Mean as a snake, cusses like a sailor, does bad things, and loves Jesus with all of his heart. I led him to Christ. He came up to the back end of our church and parked his boat. We were on the bay on Key Biscayne. Got out, had jeans that were torn, he was barefoot. I said, "Who are you?" And he said, "Who are you?" And I said, "I'm a preacher." And then he said, "I'm a lawyer. Don't have a job, but I'm a lawyer." I said, "Let's talk." So we talked, and I led him to Christ. And it was real, man. You know what he's now in the mountains of North Georgia, Ellijay, or near Ellijay, where the national park is. And he gets donuts and coffee on Sunday mornings in the season, goes into the park, wakes up the campers, and has church for them. But he was the corporate attorney for Exxon, made a lot of money, and wanted to get off the fast track and went to North Georgia. And mean, I could tell you, somebody stole our 1-800 Key Life number. These two guys got in a fight and it was stolen. I called AT&T and they said they were sorry. It was policy. It was gone. It couldn't be restored for 6 months, and by then somebody else would have it. Now, you got to know, that's our lifeline. We get thousands of calls on that 1-800 Key Life number. So I called John up in the mountains and I said, "John, I'm in trouble." He said, "Good. How can I help you?" And I said, AT&T has our 800 number and they're not going to give it back. And they told me, we said, "I'll fix it." He called me 2 hours later and he said, "You got it back." I said, "How'd you do that?" He said, "I found out who the corporate attorney was at AT&T. I said, "What did you say to him?" I said to him, "Look, I'm a lawyer and I'm going to sue you for a motherload of money. And I've got a suit and I'm going to win it. Except that I work for these crazy Christians in Florida and they say I have to talk to you before I sue you." I said, "Well, what did he say?" He said he gave me the number back. It's so good. One time he's sitting on his front porch up in the mountains, and he said, "Brown, you love me, don't you?" And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "I love you too." And he said, "The only time we get together is when you're in trouble." Jesus is kind of like that. I think my life would be a lot better, except that when I'm in trouble, I go running to him. He dispenses mercy and justice. And you're going to stand before God. Boy, does that scare you? I know we're covered and all, but I can see myself standing before God. And he tells me stuff I wouldn't tell you because he knows my secrets. And he will say, "Do you got anybody to speak for you?" And I said, "I don't know." About that time, the counselor will come and put his hand on my shoulder and say, "Father, I took care of it on the cross, and I'm justified." That's what it means, Christmas. Christmas means the wonderful counselor came, and you're justified. And then finally, I want you to note, turn, if you will, to the 14th chapter of John. I'm going to start at the 15th verse. Not only did Isaiah say the coming Messiah, supernatural Messiah, would speak truth, share favor, secure justice, the coming Messiah would supply comfort. And this is the 16th verse, and I will ask the Father, and he will give you another helper. If you're using the NIV or the King James Version, that says counselor, to be with you forever. Now, who's that? You drop down to the 18th verse. I will not leave you orphans. I will come to you. Did you hear about the convention of psychiatrists at one of the Disney resort hotels? Went on for a week. These psychiatrists met, and a pigeon got in the conference hall. And it was 3 days before any of those guys would admit having seen it. That's the way we are, the dove. It gets really bad, and then finally we turn to him, the font of comfort, the dove, the spirit even of Jesus, who is our counselor. Were you here when Bev gave her testimony about David and all the stuff they've been through? That's so good. I mean, she was, I thought, oh, Bev, don't lie to us. Boy, she didn't. I mean, she told us all the bad stuff they'd gone through, how hard it was, and how God seemed to have deserted her. And the guy that came in said, your God sure didn't stick by. And boy, Bev's talking all this. And then she comes to the end and she says, and he was there. One of my books was reprinted, one I'd done a lot of years ago. And they wanted me to go through it and edit it. I didn't have to edit it. But they wanted me to write a new introduction to it. And I took out the old edition and looked at my picture. And I thought, good Lord, what happened to that young man? He had hair, his lines, no lines in his face. So much. And I looked at the new picture and I thought, gosh, no hair, lines of pain, but laugh lines too. I've done stuff I never thought I'd do. I've sinned in ways I never thought I'd sin. I've gone places I never thought I'd go. I've lost my parents and my brother. I've felt more pain than I ever thought I would feel. I've been so lonely sometimes I thought I'd die. There are times when I wanted to run away because it hurt so very bad. But listen to me, I'm an old guy, and I bring my witness to you. I never once had to do it alone. I never once had to do it alone. It's an old story. You probably have heard Pete tell it. It's a preacher's story. It took place in Scotland, and it really did take place. There was a Scottish gentleman who was on his deathbed, and his pastor came to visit, sat down at the chair by his bed, and he said, how you doing, Mac? And he said, I'm okay. I believe the right things. But he said, God's not very real to me, and you can forget about Jesus. He said, I pray. I use the liturgy from the Church of Scotland, but Jesus isn't very real. And his pastor said, let me tell you what to do. When you pray, picture Jesus sitting in this chair where I'm sitting. And just talk to him the way you're talking to me right now. And then they talked about some other things, and the pastor left. The next morning, the phone rang in the church manse, and the pastor picked it up, and it was the daughter of the man he had visited the day before. And she said, Father died last night. She said, and Pastor, it happened so quickly. He said, I took him his dinner, and then I came back into the room to get the dishes, and he was gone. And she said, but a funny thing. He said, his hand was resting on the chair by the bed. You think about that.
Amen. Willow Creek Church is associated with the Presbyterian Church in America. Our website is www.willowcreekchurch.org, and our phone number is 407-699-8211.